You are Locked On Phillies, your daily Philadelphia Phillies podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
What's going on, guys? It is Wednesday, May 27th, 2020. This is Locked On Phillies. I'm Tim Kelly. Today's show is brought to you by Built Bar. I'm trying to really clean up my diet right now, but I don't want to eat stuff that doesn't taste good. And Built Bar's kind of given me the best of both worlds because they taste great, they're soft, they're easy to chew, they're covered in 100% chocolate, and they have options with or without nuts. On top of how good they taste, though, they're actually healthy for you. The bars are low calorie, low sugar, high protein, high fiber, and they actually fill you up. If Built Bar sounds like your type of treat, go to builtbar.com and use promo code LOCKEDON and you'll get $10 off your first order. Again, that's promo code LOCKEDON for $10 off your first order at builtbar.com. So MLB Trade Rumors is doing this really interesting feature right now where they're going team by team and trying to figure out which 15 players in the organization you would protect if there was an expansion draft. Now, baseball hasn't had an expansion draft since 1998, and there's no indication that they ever will again, and certainly not in this economic climate. They're not going to be talking about expansion anytime soon. But we did just see this a few years ago in the NHL. The Las Vegas Golden Knights reached the Stanley Cup in their first season of existence with a roster that was largely built out of players that they got in an expansion draft. Now, that isn't usually how things go for new teams. A lot more times they go like it did for the Houston Texans, where there's no way for you to build a competitive roster your first few seasons of existence, and the quarterback that you draft ends up kind of having his career ruined by that. But there are only so many players you can block from being picked off by an expansion draft, and some really good players can still slip through the cracks, not that differently from the Rule 5 draft. So it got me to thinking, who would the Phillies protect in the event that there was an expansion draft? I'm not going to do 15 because I don't want to rip off MLB Trade Rumors idea completely. And to be honest with you, I struggled to fill out a list of mostly 10 valuable people, or of the 10 most valuable players in the organization, let alone 15. So here are the 10 most valuable players in the Phillies organization, starting with number one, and that's Bryce Harper. I don't doubt that there's going to be some lean years at the end of Bryce Harper's 13-year contract, but this is only year two of the deal, and he's 27 years old. I don't believe he'll ever top his 2015 season, but I do think he's going to have his most prolonged stretch of very good to elite seasons with the Phillies. And when you add in how valuable he is as a brand, he's kind of the easy decision here. Now, number two is Aaron Nola. And Nola may be in somewhat of a similar case as Bryce Harper. He may never have a better season than he did in 2018. But even if he's closer to the pitcher that he was in 2017 or 2019, there's still a ton of value in that. And for as long as it feels like he's been around, Aaron Nola's only 26 years old. He doesn't rely on throwing 98 miles an hour, so the thinking is he should age relatively well. And he's only owed $34 million between now and 2022, and there's a $16 million club option for 2023. Even if he only ends up being a really solid number three like Pete Maccannon once suggested, his contract currently is a steal, and of course, he's already proven he's been an all-star. He finished third in Cy Young Award voting two seasons ago. The second half of the 2017 season, he was an elite pitcher. He's proven to be more than a very good number three pitcher, but the contract that he has is such a steal that even if he's only that, contractually, the Phillies are getting a steal. The third most valuable player in the organization is JT Realmuto, in my estimation. I actually think you could make the case that this is too high for a catcher that's in his late 20s and can be a free agent this offseason, but he just put together one of the most complete seasons I've ever seen from a Philly, and he's unquestionably the best player at his position in baseball right now and was unquestionably the best player in the Phillies organization last year. I also think given how great of an athlete he is, he'll age better than a lot of catchers. He's not built like Benji Molina or Wilson Ramos where you kind of worry about about how they would age. He's a really athletic guy, potentially could play another position, I believe, but obviously his biggest value comes at catcher, where he is one of the best offensive catchers, and last season was the best overall defensive catcher and maybe the best overall defensive player in the entire sport. So for now, JT Realmuto checks in at number three. We'll see if he's still in that spot a year from now, but he's there for now. Number four is Zach Wheeler. The Phillies just signed him to a five-year, $118 million contract. And when you consider how important it is for them to develop more frontline pitching, I do think it's possible he could go above Realmuto here, and you could say he's the third most valuable. And in a trade, I think he would probably have more value than JT Realmuto right now. So again, you could put him at number three if you're so inclined. But for now, we'll leave him here. As a Met, he was a very good middle-of-the-rotation guy that flashed the potential of being a number one. We'll see if he can more consistently pitch at that level, but when you consider how much Steven Strasburg and Gerrit Cole, who signed after him, ultimately ended up getting, I think this deal is going to age really well, assuming he's healthy. Even if he's only a number three starter, I think by the end of this deal, we're going to look at the amount of money he's making, and that's going to be kind of par for the course for very good number two, number three, number four type starters. So this is a deal that I think the Phillies did very well on. The final person in the top five is the first minor leaguer, and that's Spencer Howard. He's the top overall prospect in the Phillies organization, and it is so crucial to the long-term success and the short-term success of the Phillies that he develops into a frontline starter. When he was healthy last year, he was electric, and I expect to see him at the major league level in 2020 if there is a season, maybe in the rotation from the get-go. And if he develops into a number one or a number two, you could have a pretty solid trio at the top of your rotation for the next half decade and maybe longer with him, Aaron Nola, and Zach Wheeler. So number six, we're going to get our second minor leaguer, our second consecutive minor leaguer. That's Alec Boehm. If he can stick at third base, which I'm increasingly skeptical of after watching him in spring training, that would obviously increase his value. But if not, you can try him in left field. You can try him at first base. I think there's going to be a DH if there's a season this year. I am almost 100% sure come the new CBA in 2022, there's going to be a DH. And who knows that they don't just say next year, you know what, let's just cut to the chase. If we're going to do, if we did the DH in 2020 and we think we're going to do it in 2022, we may as well just have a universal DH in 2021 and forever after that. And Alec Boehm would fit into that role extremely well. I think he's going to be a middle of the order bat that can hit 35 home runs a season at his peak. He, to me, is one of the most important players in this organization and has a chance to hit in the middle of the order with Bryce Harper for a very long time. Number seven is Scott Kingery, and this is where things get interesting, and maybe other people would have different orders. I bounced this list off with a few other people before doing this podcast, so I know other people felt this was about the spot on the list where things got a little dicey for them. But I think Kingery only began to scratch the surface last year after a very disappointing season. I think he has more to give as an offensive player. Now, some people, in my opinion, have overrated him in the sense that they say, I know there was an anonymous quote a few years ago about how he's a better version of Dustin Pedroia. Dustin Pedroia won an MVP. There's people that say that have made comparisons, and this is going to happen to any second baseman in the Phillies organization that people think is going to be really good, but they've compared him to Chase Utley. That's not fair, and I don't think that's what his ceiling is. But I think he has a really high ceiling as an offensive player, and we began to see that in the first half of the season last year. And even if he only ends up just playing at one position, that's fine. But you'll never convince me it's not a good thing that he can play almost every single position on the diamond. And probably the most valuable thing about him is that he signed to one of the most team-friendly contracts in baseball history. The Phillies can control him at a very reasonable price through 2026 if they choose to do so. So my guess is Scott Kingery, by the time this is all said and done, is probably going to spend a decade or more in the Phillies organization. Number eight is Rhys Hoskins. And a year ago, I would have had him higher on this list. And some people, I think, would still have him higher on this list. This is obviously a huge year for him. He is a significantly better player than he showed in the second half of last year. But he's always had peaks and valleys. And the valleys have just been too low. And he's had a few years now where you kind of just wonder, is that who he is? It's valuable that he is popping a great eye, but when he's not locked in, his value kind of goes down the drain because he's not a good fielder. He's not a good defensive third baseman. I can think of two separate games last year where the Phillies didn't win simply because he didn't squeeze the ball thrown to him at first base. Maybe that means he'll eventually be a DH, but I think Alec Bohm may fill that role, and Bryce Harper could in the second half of his contract as well. And I heard people this offseason talking about maybe the Phillies should move Rhys Hoskins for young pitching. I just don't think there's that type of market. He absolutely brings value to your lineup. He's a great clubhouse guy, a great organizational influence. He's at every press conference, every event. He's really taken on being a leader, and that's awesome and that's important. But I also feel like so far in his career, he's proven to be replaceable. Now, there's lots of very good players that are replaceable. Pat Burrell helped the Phillies win a World Series. He was a replaceable player. So that isn't necessarily a diss, but I would say compared to some of the other people higher on this list, Rhys Hoskins is probably more replaceable, and that's why he's here. Number nine on the list is our third prospect, Bryson Stott, the shortstop who was the Phillies' first-round pick last year. I think it's about the worst-kept secret in baseball that the Phillies have not consistently developed talent like elite teams, certainly not like teams such as the Nationals and the Braves in their own division have done, which makes them hitting on a first-round pick like Bryson Stott that much more important. Since he was drafted last year, and even when he was a candidate to be drafted, a prospect, there have been some people that say he can play shortstop and others that think he's going to have to change positions, maybe play second base. MLB Pipeline compared him to Brandon Crawford. Well, Brandon Crawford has been a mainstay for the Giants because he's arguably been the best fielding shortstop of his era and one of the better fielding shortstops of all time. If Bryson Stott has a career like Brandon Crawford, that would be a massive success, but it would also mean he stays at shortstop. So we'll ultimately see, but he relatively easily found his way onto this list just because he was the team's first-round pick last year, and I think there is a lot of hope. Number 10, I really struggle with. Obviously, Sir Anthony Dominguez would be on this list, maybe even pushing into the top five if he was healthy. But if he ends up needing Tommy John surgery, which it appears when he's able to get back in America, he's going to get a second opinion. But the first opinion was he needed Tommy John surgery. If he ends up doing that, he's going to miss the better part of 3 years. He missed 75% of the season last year. If he has Tommy John in July or August, he would obviously miss all of the 2020 season. And then you get to 2021, and David Robertson had Tommy John surgery in August of last year, and maybe he'll come back and pitch in August or September this year, but that's no guarantee. So if Sir Anthony Dominguez doesn't end up having Tommy John surgery until August or September, he may miss all of 2021, too, and who knows what happens after he comes back from that. The Phillies wanted him. I wrote an article about this on Phillies Nation to be their Craig Kimbrel, and instead, he's having a career like Johnny Venters. Now, Johnny Venters eventually found his way back to the majors and had an effective season in 2018, I believe it was, but it wasn't with the Braves, and it was years after they had expected him to be kind of a mainstay in that bullpen. So I can't put Sir Anthony Dominguez on this list right now, even though he's absolutely one of the 10 most talented players in the organization. You could say Hector Neris, who was very good last year. The flip side of that, though, is you never know year to year what you're getting from a reliever. He was excellent last year. Two seasons ago, he spent time in AAA Lehigh Valley because he struggled so much. So there's that side of it. And obviously there's value in relievers, but in terms of if you traded Hector Neris, I don't know that you would get a ton. Like, you traded Pat Neshek a couple years ago after he'd been an all-star, and he was older and in a contract year, granted, throw all those in. But you got J.D. Hammer, who is still just kind of a wild card. Maybe he figures it out, but the Phillies were, they kept him in the organization ultimately. They were willing to DFA him in the offseason, so that could have been all she wrote after just part of one season that wasn't especially good. So I think unless you have a reliever like Aroldis Chapman, you don't end up getting a ton of impact prospects for relievers. And I didn't simply make this list based on who would draw the most trade interest if they were on the market. But that certainly factored in, and I think Hector Neris would draw a lot of interest. I just don't know how much value you'd get back in return. Adonis Medina is someone a few years ago we thought, oh, it's going to be Sixto Sanchez and Adonis Medina and Aaron Nola at the top of the rotation. Sixto Sanchez is going to be at the top of the rotation, but it's going to be for the Marlins because you traded him for JT Realmuto. And now you have Adonis Medina, who he really had some outliers 2 years ago, and that gave me hope that he would bounce back last year. That didn't happen, and at this point, he's kind of off the radar. If he bounces back, that's great, but I don't think you're at a point now where you're counting on much of anything from him moving forward. So I'm not going to fault you here if you say Hector Neris, or even if you just bank on Didi Gregorius or Gene Segura having a bounce back year and say them, but I'm actually going to take the wild card of Nick Pivetta. I think he has the lowest floor of the trio of him, Vince Velasquez, and Zach Eflin, and we saw that last year. But I also think of that group, he has the highest ceiling, and pitchers are not, they are the definition of an inexact science, and it's very difficult for me to sit here and say, oh, I know for sure that Nick Pivetta, who is still relatively young, is not going to pan out, because I've seen other pitchers that have had disastrous starts or not very good starts, and all of a sudden something clicks. He has a new coaching staff this year. Maybe that helps him. I think it became clear at the end of the last year that him and Gabe Kapler were not on the same page. So, look, it's my guess that Nick Pivetta doesn't pan out mentally. I think he's really struggled to consistently keep a positive approach. And I'm not sure that's a hurdle he's going to be able to clear. If he does, though, there's no debating his stuff and his potential upside. And I guess what this exercise proves is how top-heavy of an organization the Phillies really are right now. If you go to the elite teams in baseball, the Yankees, the Astros, the Dodgers, the Rays, the Braves, you would be hard-pressed to cap yourself at 10 players just on the major league roster that you would want to prevent another team from taking, let alone in the entire organization. I struggled to fill out this 10-player list, and that's probably one of the reasons why the Phillies are where they are, where you think this is a team that is going to be in the hunt, but do they have enough, especially in a season where there's going to be a lot of games in a short amount of time if there's a season, and you're going to be relying on organizational depth. Do they have enough to compete over the course of a full season? We shall see. Still, I think any of us would be ecstatic to learn that the Phillies are going to have a 2020 season at all. That's going to do it for today's show. You can follow me on Twitter at Tim Kelly Sports. Read my work on PhilliesNation.com and Radio.com. Now, tell your smart speaker to play the latest episode of Locked On Fantasy Baseball. I'll talk to you guys next time.